How do you say your last name again?
Could be like Conter.
It is when I am in my French accent, but if I am not, then it is just Conter.
Ah oui, est-ce que vous parlez encore? Mais oui.
Oui, oui, je parle couramment. J'aime parler français. On peut faire l'interview en français, si tu veux.
On va dire ça, Gina.
What the fuck are you talking about? By the way, we swear.
Oh, good.
And this is how it's going to go with Megan. So welcome to the women your mother warned you
Thank
about.
Thank you.
The podcast that makes business sexy again.
We have Megan with us today. Megan Conter, not Conter, or all the other words that we were making up earlier. And she is the chief. This is what I have. I could be wrong on your bio. We're going to make your bio up as we go. The chief laugh instigator.
Yes.
Is that right?
That's right.
Chief. That is the coolest title. I thought my title, Chief Results Officer, was cool, but no, Chief Laugh Instigator. I think that's why Casey Hasen introduced us, because she felt like there would be a good connection with the laughter.
Exactly.
And she introduced us and she sent an email that said, Megan is the Chief Laugh Instigator. She has started a movement connecting high-powered women to other like women in an effort to help each other grow.
That's a good synopsis on Casey's part.
Yeah,
good.
That was her synopsis. Your LinkedIn profile says empowering 6- and 7-figure female founders and leaders to grow their leadership and businesses in a community of mastery, specifically talking about the dames. So we're going to dive into all of that.
Yes.
But before we do, but wait, we are the women your mother warned you about, and we consider ourselves women that many people's mothers have warned them about.
Totally.
Us. Totally. So we're curious. Are you a woman your mother warned other people about?
I wholeheartedly am, and I will wear that badge with honor. That's why I'm so excited to be on this podcast. I think pretty much any woman who puts herself out there, especially at this stage of the game, I think any woman who puts herself out there, there are mothers out there who are going to talk about it, because let's face it, our mothers and their mothers were kind of cloistered, and they weren't really that outspoken, and they really didn't have a lot of space to be themselves, or didn't feel the freedom to be themselves. And our generations do. So, you know, not to get super serious right off the bat, but
What makes you a woman your mother warned people about?
I would say that not in a super bad sense or anything, but I'm the one that's just, people would probably say, oh man, she's weird. Like, you get to know her, she's just weird. You never know what accent she's going to bring out or what story she's going to tell. She's super vulnerable too. So if you want to be like, just on the surface, you're probably not going to like to talk to Megan, because she likes to go deep and she likes to, you know, open up her jacket to let everybody see what's inside. And I have weird shit that comes out of my mouth like that all the time too. And I don't care. I love it. That's what I'm here for.
Then you fit in perfect here with us.
Say what?
Then you fit in perfect.
Yes.
With us.
Exactly.
Based on that, we like to open our jacket. Right, Rachel?
Always.
Let's talk about Megan's story. What is the story behind Megan? We're going to dive into the dames and what the dames is, and I totally love that name, and I want to talk about that a lot, but I want to know a little more about Megan and how she got where she is today.
Sounds good. Well, I was born on a snowy day back in the late 70s. It was snow up to the, 5 foot tall people, which I was not yet because I was just born. But anyways, I definitely was one of those kids who was called a brown noser. I was called the teacher's pet. You know, I grew up feeling awkward a lot of times. I actually remember having like existential crises when I was young. At one point I just hit my head when I was washing my hair, and I experienced this like blackness in the vastness. And I decided that it was the nothingness that was in the never ending story. And so I remember distinctively thinking about how we're all part of this nothingness, and we're nothing if we don't make ourselves what we're going to become. Just random side note that just popped into my head there.
My brain just melted
you
a little.
You were a weird child.
Exactly. The nothing.
So
as I grew, I graduated high school, went into college, became a great binge drinker like all of us great college kids were, made it through university, went and studied in France for a year, which is basically I started learning French at about 4 years old. So that's why Rachel and I were riffing on a little French earlier. But I love the French culture. I love everything that has to do with France. But I came back to the U.S. and finished out school, went into like a pretty abysmal 6-year career in corporate where I felt like, man, if this is going to be my professional life for the next 40 years, I'm going to be dead pretty soon. And really just had that feeling of, God, this is a sad story, this corporate world. That's what my experience was. Of course, it was early on in my career. I had my marketing degree. I was in a lot of just very entry-level jobs. But as I continued to get older, I just felt like, oh my gosh, how am I going to do this? So thankfully, 2009 came. Housing market crashed. I was a marketing director of an architecture firm, so I was laid off looking for a job in 2009. Oof, hard time to be looking for a job.
I remember. That's when I started a business.
Yep. So basically,
because I lost my job.
That's exactly what happened. So I met several entrepreneurs when I was job hunting who picked my brain and said, man, you're really good at this marketing stuff. You should start your own marketing consulting business. So I did. And never would have thought that would happen earlier on. It just, in school and with my parents guiding me as I was younger, it was always this, you go climb the corporate ladder trajectory. But as soon as I started my business, got my first business cards and, email address and everything, it was like I found the perfect ski slope. I had the perfect boots, the perfect skis. Everything was just, bluebird day. And I had found my path. So it was like my life really began kind of in my late 30s, which is what I feel like happened. So fast forward, I've had, my business has taken its ups and downs. I've been a social media marketing consultant where we had a team of about 7 at one point. We're running people's social media accounts, did a lot of discovery in 2012, started on my spiritual path, which I basically woke up at 2012 and realized I didn't have any self-love. And I also had no attachment to my Christian upbringing. And so I wanted to figure out where I was and who am I and where am I headed in this world. So I feel really fortunate to have started my spiritual journey at the same time, basically, as my business journey. The two have really gone together and flowed well together. So as I grew my marketing business, focused on marketing and branding strategy after a while, and I've always had this passion of helping women get to that 7-figure mark, because I did a lot of research early on to find out that only 2% of female-owned businesses ever hit that 7-figure mark. And I personally have seen so many women-run businesses create amazing solutions, very creative solutions to complex problems that have existed for, centuries. And I've also witnessed women creating kick-ass company cultures and really achieving epic missions. And we can do that a lot easier when we have more revenue, more resources. So That's been a passion of mine. I really was a catalyst and a catapult for women-owned businesses to help them reach over that 7-figure mark. And as I was doing this, I was leading other people's networking events, leads groups, so on and so forth, and just kept finding that I was bumping into the multi-level marketing salespeople and the MetLife salespeople and the coach who just printed her business cards on Vistaprint yesterday. And that's great and all, But I was growing a 6-figure business to a 7-figure business and wanted to find other women who were doing the same. Couldn't find it here in Denver. So I decided to start what was back then Denver Dames. We've always had a humor first, humor forward approach where we open up the audience with comedy, improv, you name it, so that we can really get out of our serious skin and into our more authentic selves. And then we can connect better, more authentically, and we're actually receptive to the messages that are going to be shared for the rest of the event. So we have education mixed in there, and we've got inspiration from women running 7-figure businesses. And as we continued to grow here in Denver, I got the proof of concept all ironed out, rebranded as the Dames, launched our global online membership in 2017, launched our chapter model in 2018, and now we're expanding worldwide with an application-based membership program, bringing women who run 6- and 7-figure businesses and women who are in director plus roles at large corporations together to laugh, learn, and grow. That's the quick.
I love it. I love it. Go ahead, Rachel.
All I wanted to say was woo.
Woo. Do you want to say it in French?
Woo.
That's how we are around here. We do a lot of laughing. I really love the name, the Dames, and I was on the website. And where did I see it?
It's on the about page, I think.
Yeah. Historically, the title given to a woman equivalent to the rank of a knight. I love that.
Right? Ooh. It's kind of a tongue-in-cheek thing, right? My title when I was in marketing was the mistress of marketing. And people were like, what does that mean? And I'm like, I don't know. What does it mean to you? It's more fun to say that I'm the mistress of marketing than anything else. And so it just kind of lent itself to this place of, well, dames are royalty status. And we women who have grown our businesses to that 6- and 7-figure mark, quite frankly, we're at that royalty status. But it's also this like other playful side coming in of like, yeah, we're royalty. We wear we're queens. We wear crowns. Like, sure, why not? But it doesn't mean that we're bitches either. That's the
other part. I think it's such a fun name, such a fun title, because totally. We see a lot of stuff out there that has the word queen in it. Yeah, but I love the dames. What makes the dames different from all of these other networking groups? Like, well, I'm not even going to name them, but there are other networking groups out there and other female owned networking groups out there. So what makes the dames different?
The first would be the caliber of our members. So we serve that niche that's sort of in the middle. You've gotten past the initial stages of business where you're really trying to get proof of concept and get your business off the ground. You have to be running a 6- or 7-figure company, or you have to already have achieved that director level in your corporation. So a lot of the beginning stages are off the charts, whatever I'm trying to say. They're not in our community.
Yeah.
So you're coming in and you're going to be surrounded by other women who are facing similar challenges to you, but they also have similar celebrations. So that's number one. A lot of the other groups, there's no requirement of where you have to be. And then there is another suite of amazing groups that are at that higher echelon where you have to be running a multi-7-figure organization. And that's where a lot of our members will filter up that way. Or for instance, if women come to us and they're not quite ready for the dames, we can filter them into some of the other organizations that are more revenue agnostic. But once you're in the dames, what makes us completely different is our strategic matchmaking process. So as we grow with members now in 35 states and on 3 continents, and we continue to grow that membership, we want to make sure that when you come in as a new member, we get to know as much about you as we can that's pertinent, and then we can strategically match you to the women that you need to know in the community, whether that's in your local chapter or it's across the world. Women that can actually help you make an impact and vice versa, and that can become great referral partners. There's no business card stabbing allowed in our organization. So
business card stabbing.
You're not feeling like you're being hunted every time you come to an event, whether that's virtual or in person. You feel like you're actually having fun. That's something else that helps us stand out, is that humor forward approach that is intertwined into all of our events. So those are the two big ones. And then of course we have trainings that are geared toward that level. We have inspiration from our 7-figure dames of influence, we call them, and all kinds of other fun stuff that helps us connect more authentically. But those are the strategic matchmaking, the caliber, and the level of fun that we bring.
So are you vetting them to make sure that they're in that?
Yep. We have an application-based process, and we want to make sure that they're a revenue fit, but also B, a culture fit, that they believe in collaboration, not competition. They're not going to come in and try to just add a whole bunch of people to their email list and annoy the crap out of people. They want to actually be part of a community where they can collaborate, refer, cross-refer, you know, maybe even come up with different things like what you guys are doing right here. This is a phenomenal collaboration with two different businesses. Our mm-hmm. network fosters a lot of those kinds of relationships long-term.
Hmm. Do you find a lot of these women, because let's be real, the percentage of CEOs of companies, seven-figure plus companies, are generally more male dominated, right? So do you find that these women, because Gina and I talk about this a lot, that our real demographic is the super successful woman who also cries in the shower because she's just like overwhelmed, doesn't really have anybody to talk to sometimes. And I'm sure that these women, or do you find that these women have that kind of need and they're so happy to find this community of other
all
women
the time.
With the same kind
and
of problems?
That's, so part of that strategic matchmaking is not only understanding like maybe what industries or verticals that they're in, so that if they were to be matched with someone in a similar industry in say a different state or a different country, there's a lot that can really grow and interesting changes that can be fostered during those relationships. But certainly even in our just in our global connection events, there's a lot of talk around how do we shift the paradigm. And that's something that I'm big into is, you know, we're in the middle of a giant paradigm shift and business is not going to be done the way that it was for the last several centuries, thanks to us. We're here to innovate this shit, shake it up and say, look, you can't look at the prototypes that the men have designed and then try to put that blueprint on top of your business and do that and be successful. A vast majority of women can't because we're not built the same way as men. Our masculine energy and our feminine energy are balanced in different ways. And so I think it's really what I keep seeing is that women are realizing, okay, I got to stand out differently. I've got to actually make my business fit me energetically and fit where I'm headed. And it's not going to happen looking at all the business books written by men. I'll tell you that much.
Thus the need for more business books written by, I knew where you were going.
That's what I was about to say.
I knew
Gina,
where you were
going.
This is
another business.
This is how connected we are.
Exactly.
I cut you off before you could get there.
I'm Gina's biggest cheerleader for her to get her fucking book out there. Because it's going to be so good.
It's in process. It's in process. It's actually in process.
That's better than it was. She's gone from thinking about it and having a plan in her head to it's going on.
I mean, it's outlined. It's being written. It's happening.
Yes.
It's happening. Sweet. Don't you worry. It's coming. It's coming.
So, Megan, have you been doing, obviously, during the pandemic this year, more virtual online meetups, and how did you shift into that type of scenario? And do you think it's affected the business and the networking?
Yeah. So luckily back in 2017, I didn't mention this, but throughout the whole process of growing the business, everything pretty much about the Dames has come to me in meditation. So I get direct downloads of information. It may seem like a crazy idea at that point in time, but I know to execute it because it's coming to me through my intuition. And so I created the vast majority of our events with this global membership online as of 2017. So we started using Zoom and you know, figuring out all this stuff and integrating it in with our membership website back in 17. So luckily when this happened, I have my people, my processes, I have all the tech in place. It was a matter of then taking our in-person events, which, you know, Gina and I can, you know, we were talking about this when we met. It's been difficult to, of course, try to make that. You can't really make in-person experiences the same as online experiences. So there was a good learning curve in there of how do we make it exciting and still have that high vibrating energy that's always at our in-person events through our global, what we've made now global online events. And so those have been really fun to produce because it's a different animal now. And so it's still bringing that same high energy and fun, but that's the one thing we've had to pivot.
Yeah. How has the energy been since you've done that shift?
It's been really, really high and fun and powerful, and more women who I think were having a hard time finding and accessing this are now craving it. So our, especially virtual membership with global members has grown I think 200% since the beginning of March. So the expected growth that I had for this year, we achieved already last month, which is pretty awesome.
It's so fascinating how certain businesses have exploded throughout this pandemic. I think possibly businesses that were prepared for it, as yours sounds like it was, Megan, that you already had a lot of the foundation laid to just pivot a little bit and see exponential growth.
Yeah, and I think there's also a sense of staying on mission is what's really important. So I knew from the very beginning that I wanted to create a global network. So the whole thing with France is that I had a full-on vision in 2017 of having chapters all around the globe and being able to have several chapters throughout France. That's selfishly, that's my biggest, my biggest goal. So I had this vision full blown, and I can feel it in every one of my cells, of speaking in front of thousands of women in France. And so it's been this global network on my mind since the very beginning anyways. Now it's just a matter of, okay, global network, this is how we build that, ladies. You can't do that in person. So we've been doing this, and this is, really translating that and helping women understand how to energetically connect with other women through Zoom, how to build high-performing relationships with power partners, and what you need to do on a continuous basis to really have a global network that works for you, that's creating business opportunities, that's creating happiness and mental health opportunities, and so much more.
You know, one thing that sticks out to me is the combination of your personal desires and business strategy. And, we often neglect, what our personal bigger purposes are, because we're trying to make the buck or get there financially and get things stable. And we got the bigger personal vision, Rachel has one, I have one, we're always trying to okay, we're going to get there. And it's a good reminder for all of us to put it out there constantly to remind ourselves what it is, because before you know it, it shows up.
1,000%. And I think also that we often try to either separate ourselves personally and professionally. And so it's like, well, I can't. Some people I've run into believe that it's very difficult to achieve their personal mission through their business. But I think that that's the biggest gift as a business owner, as an entrepreneur, is that we are absolutely created to achieve our personal missions through our business. And there, that is completely possible. But that connection to that vision and the making sure that it's a big enough carrot dangled out in front of you that you're always going toward is the key. And that it's my belief that we have to grow more personally than we do professionally even. And if we stop growing personally out on the outside professionally, it will show up at some point and it will bite you in your ass. And it's also really crucial to move any of the blocks out of your way, despite how much you're kicking and screaming to hold on to them, in order to be able to fly faster toward achieving your mission. There's always plenty of things you can do to put bricks on your feet and walk with them on. That's the easier way of doing things, quite honestly, which seems counterintuitive, but the harder way is working on those things that we really have to ditch so that we can truly get there faster and get shit done.
Oh, we have been there. Mm-hmm. Hey, Warners, just a quick reminder. If you love this episode, share the love. Share it with someone. Share this episode or the show with a friend. Pass the link on. Promote it on social media, on the interwebs. Share the show. Share the love. And now back to the show.
That made me think of, reaching success and things, and you have to face like the hardest thing. Like right now I'm in this fitness journey on a personal level, which I'm going to use on a business level. And I have to weigh myself every morning, which for many, many, many years and many, many eating disorders and all kinds of things, it was like the worst possible thing. I never have owned a scale until this year. And now I weigh myself every day. It's not a big deal because it's a different approach. And I put that out front in the beginning and said, this has been a problem for me and I'm afraid of it. And now we just take it as as an activity, and it's not, I'm no longer emotionally attached to an activity. And I think that happens with people. You get emotionally attached to some kind of activity, whether it be eating or stepping on the scale or making prospecting phone calls or whatever, you're afraid of it. And so it becomes this big deal instead of just an activity that you have to do in order to achieve your goal.
Or like the opposite, which I've been experiencing recently, which is my addiction to anger, which has just raised its ugly head and helped me see it after quitting drinking. And I'm 3 years sober at this point. So
good for you.
It was like at that point, thank you. Thank you. At that point of...
I knew that there was more to the story that we had talked about before.
You said something earlier, Megan, and I'm 8 years sober. So you said, I always felt alone or I always felt out of place. Like immediately, I was like, that was my, it's interesting.
I'm sure you have, but have you read We Are the Luckiest?
Keep going.
Rachel? Oh. I read that one. So
I have not.
Yeah, the whole thing that I was saying earlier about the blocks is that, you know, basically it's 2017. I'm creating this whole big thing. I feel like it's slightly, here comes my weird programming again. Like this can't be right. Like I'm really supposed to build this online community and teach women how to network globally. And when in-person connection is so important, and I just kept getting, yes, 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 you need to create this. And at the same time, I just felt like I was walking around with, like I mentioned, cinder blocks on my feet. And it's like, what the fuck is going on here? And I really had to stop and look at that big picture of where I'm headed and see for the first time this big block that was right in front of me, which was, you know, binge drinking. Like I'm just average person. I drink just like my friends do. I don't have a problem. I'm not an alcoholic. Why do I need to quit drinking? Well, because it's the one thing that is my Achilles heel that's keeping me from actually being able to take these stupid cinder blocks off and fucking run. And it's not an easy decision. It was not easy for me to unravel that from my life, from my social life. It still cripples my social life to a certain extent, but I've really now at 3 years started to learn, okay, who am I now? And I'm still a fun person. I'm still the life of the party. It's just a different party. And at the same time, getting to this point of where I realized when I got sober, I was 39, if I'm doing the math right, 38, 39, something like that. And I didn't know who I was as an emotional being because I had either been prescribed and using antidepressants, or I had been drinking to cover up a lot of the feelings for so long that now I'm 37 years old, 38, whatever the hell, and I'm trying to figure out who I am as an emotional being, which is very interesting. So in this year, what has really raised its ugly head to be dealt with first and foremost is my anger and how I tend to go to that emotion. It's a secondary emotion. I tend to go to it very easily. It causes a lot of strife in my relationships, you know, with my husband, with my stepdaughter. But it's also something that I can't take with me being the leader of a multi-million dollar global corporation. I'm not going to. It won't take me where I'm headed. So it's recognizing these things that don't support you and doing the deep inner shadow work that really sucks.
Yes, it does.
But being willing to go to those dark places and shining the light on them so that they have a chance to be seen and be healed and be processed so that we can be better people.
That's some hard shit. The hardest person to meet is yourself. And I think, you know, that's one thing that, and Gina's watched me go through it this summer. It's a year of people getting angry and stressed out. And with being sober, I would just be like, I just want to escape it so bad. And instead of escaping it, you have to sit with it and you have to face it. And then I did buy packs of cigarettes this summer. When I tell the story to people, I'm like, yeah, because I'm quit now. And I'm like, yeah, this summer I was so stressed out, I bought cigarettes and smoked them. And people be like, what? You're like the fitness girl. I'm like, yeah, well, it's better than drinking. So, you know.
Totally. And it's like, I think we're at this stage, I don't even know what month it is, September now.
It's September.
People are thinking like, oh, we should be past all the psychological damage that this shit is creating, but there's no way. I mean, we have to realize it's still real. It's still here.
I think it's just the beginning for some people. I've said it from day one that this was going to happen, that we were going to have this huge psychological impact.
Yep.
And you can see it on a daily basis everywhere. I mean, I'm so observant of it because emotional intelligence is my jam.
Yeah.
And people like are triggered by the, I mean, I literally watched a woman go postal at the UPS store. No pun intended. No, but she was working alone on a Saturday. And there was a woman ahead of me at the counter, and the employee was talking to herself. Like, literally, when I walked in, I triggered her by walking in.
Wow.
Because me walking in sent her into a tizzy. Mm-hmm. She literally started going, oh my God, can I just get a break? Can I get a 5-minute break? I gotta eat. Oh my God, I haven't had a break. And she was like melting down, and the lady at the counter like turned around and looked at me like in fear, like, oh my God, is this woman gonna shoot me? Like, it was bad. Mm-hmm. And I, as a corporate trainer, was trying to diffuse her, and I'm like, you know, I think maybe you should go take a break.
I think you need the Snickers that I have in my pocket.
Yeah, I think you should go. She's like, I've been trying to eat, and she's like trying to eat a potato chip, and it was such a aha to me. I mean, I've seen this throughout the whole pandemic, how easily triggered people they just are. And then like the next place I went after there, Office Depot, to pick up a copy order. Not as crazy, but still like, what name is it? Yeah, I can't find your order. I'm like, well, it's there. I received an email that it was ready. What's the name again? Could it be another name? I mean, yeah. And that was like a tire. I was like, oh my gosh.
I mean, we went into IKEA a couple weekends ago and walked out of there. Like, I felt like I had slime all over my body. It was just such frenetic, gross energy. Yeah. And so I think, you know, what we have to start realizing is that we're emotional beings, but we're also human. And so we get to be more conscious of how our emotions and our feelings are creating our behaviors. And, you know, I mean, I'm a raging extrovert. And so being stuck in quarantine, and quite honestly, like, my choices of socialization are still limited at this point. I've had to figure out how to get that connection, those needs met in different ways, and continue to work on myself and realize that, oh my gosh, I can still have everything that I desire, and I'm working toward that. And I'm constantly moving blocks that are telling me, no, you can't. But at the same time, I'm also listening to my needs and realizing that I just need to give myself more self-love now. More self-love. More self-love. Keep pouring it on.
Look at my shirt.
Love yourself, doesn't it? Oh, yeah.
Love yourself. Love yourself.
Preach it.
Get your song.
So everybody needs to be working on their emotions and their anger, because it is easy to go there if you don't have an outlet to soothe it.
Right. You know? I mean, it might not be anger for other people because they might still drink, or they might still smoke a lot of weed, or they might still do whatever. Right. There's coping mechanisms out the yin yang, but it's those who are on a self-growth path. We are kind of addicted to removing these blocks because we see that it's possible. We know that it's gross and icky when you're going through the eye of the needle, but.
You know, I have to say, through this process, there have been people who have said to me, you seem so calm. And I've had a lot of things go down this year, besides the pandemic.
I'm the person who sees the non-calm.
Right?
You see the non-calm, but you also know my whole story of what's going on.
Oh, yeah.
And given everything that's going on, I'm pretty chill.
Yeah, you are.
It's like, even when you were, when you tried to quit me, Rachel, even during that time.
Yeah, you tried to quit her.
When you tried to quit me, I mean, even then I was like,
it was called breaking up, not quitting.
She was breaking when she broke up with me for a minute. Even then I was like, I was pissed, but I was calm. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, all right, I'm just gonna let her, right? Like, there was this whole process. And I think for me, what has worked for me is prayer and faith. And that, like, I just kind of sit back and go, all right, he's got a plan.
Right.
All right. He's working on the plan. All right, finish the fucking plan already.
It's so true, though. And we, you know, the mortgage industry has been crazy this summer. Yep. And everybody, and going back to, you know, your stories, you guys, that people are just nuts. Doesn't matter if you close them 2 weeks early, you close them 2 weeks late, you close them 2 days late. They're still crazy. They're like stressed out.
Yeah.
And that's where my stress has come from. Not really from the people are like, oh, the pandemic's stressing you out. I'm like, no, it's the people. Like, I'm so crazy busy.
Rachel and I talk often about the importance of counseling and therapy, and we're big into that. And
yep.
I had requested an emergency therapy session with my counselor yesterday.
Yep.
And she had a cancellation, so I was like, I'll take it. I don't care what time it is. I will cancel everything else because I really needed it. And you know, it's just a good cleansing. It's a good to just like let it out on somebody else more objective, not close to me. And then I posted something on Facebook of like, everybody needs a therapist, if not to deal with their own shit, to deal with everyone else's shit around you. And you know, as a matter of fact, and you need a business coach and a spiritual advisor, and you need a tribe. And somebody messaged me immediately and said, do you really have a therapist, and can you give me their phone number?
Yeah.
And it was a woman.
Good.
And she's like, I am losing my shit. I need help. That post was an answer from God.
Yes.
Wow.
The vulnerability that we have really creates a huge ripple effect. And the more that we as leaders are willing to talk about what's affecting us, the more that it helps everybody around us, and it changes communities and it changes lives. Yeah. You know, it's been since the beginning that I just have said, all right, if I'm doing this, if I'm leading a global movement and I'm having women that are, you know, at this level, I'm going to be vulnerable. And I'm going to talk about the times when shit sucks. And I'm going to talk about the times when things are great. And I'm going to talk about how I got from the crappy parts to the good parts.
Yeah.
And
exactly.
Give other people permission to do the same. Because once, I don't know if Rachel has had this experience, but every time I tell my sobriety story and I talk about having been a former gray area drinker and I was never diagnosed as an alcoholic, you don't have to be diagnosed as an alcoholic to quit drinking, to live a better life. I get hundreds of people that email me, call me, text me, you know, whatever, Instagram message me every single time, because they're like, thank you for speaking what was on your mind, what was happening.
Yeah.
Can I talk to you about what your journey was? Yada, yada.
Nice. I remembered what I was going to say.
Hey,
where I was going with it was that everything works out if you let it, if you do trust the plan, whether whoever you believe in, whatever entity, that most of the time when things are going wrong, it's because we're trying to control it and we're not releasing it. And in any 12-step program, that's a good one, you will learn. You got to stop making it about yourself. You got to stop trying to be the director of the entire play and control everything, because most of the time when addicts and alcoholics are unhappy, it's because things aren't going my way and you're not treating me the way that I deserve, or what, you know. So it's an interesting journey to completely let go of control. And this year in 2020, it's just, you've got it. Everything is a pivot. You know, our kids, it's just, the school deal is so crazy.
Yep.
You know, and I just saw Barb Royal, love Barb. She just posted something this morning really, really great. And it was like, hey, if you choose to leave college and come home, it's not going to be the end of the world. If you're not comfortable with all the things with COVID, come home, get a job, learn other skills, network with people, you know, this and that, do some volunteer. Like, there's ways to make every scenario work out, or just kind of go with the flow. I definitely feel like this year I've become more of a go with the flow person than I was before, where I used to be like, I had that on my schedule and now you changed it. And now I'm like, it's cool. And I have people apologizing to me all the time. Oh, I need to change this. And I'm like, it's cool. Like, let's just make it work. And if it doesn't work, we'll make it work.
I will say, since recovering from our breakup, you've noticeably have been more go with the flow.
Well, I was trying to control everything. And I was also trying to step into things that I didn't even need to try to control because I thought I was helping.
You were trying to clean my side of the street.
I was trying to clean everybody's side of this fucking street.
That's a giant spiral into the shittiest depths of hell because you can't control. And once you start thinking you can control, you just start controlling more. And it's until you realize you don't have control over shit that you end up causing more problems for yourself than anything else.
Oh gosh.
That's right. And even in my work life, I was doing that to myself and I had to have some come to Jesus moments because, like I said, I was trying to help.
Right.
And instead I was actually getting myself entangled into scenarios I didn't need to be in. I just needed to step back and let everybody else do their jobs.
But yeah, sometimes it's not our job to help.
Exactly.
It's not our job
to help yourself. Your shirt should say love and help yourself.
Speaking of helping, as we get ready to wrap up the show, I do have a couple questions on the dames. What's some advice that you can give women who are not quite yet at that level to be part of the dames? Like, what is some advice that you would give to help them level up?
Well, definitely, I think it's about understanding where you're headed. What is your big picture vision and mission? And have you really sat down and thought about that? And where do you want to be in terms of revenue, in terms of how many employees you want to have, in terms of how you're going to achieve that epic mission if you have one? And what I find as a marketing coach altogether too often is that women don't look at the intersection between their mission, their vision, their values, their goals, and then the way that they package, price, and position themselves. Because oftentimes they'll create 42 different streams of income, but they really only get revenue from three of them. And so they're spending a lot of time, you know, basically disembodying themselves, going around trying to put a finger over here and an arm over there and like giving all this effort to all of these different things. When if you just streamlined and said, okay, what are the two or three things that I can do that'll help me achieve these revenue goals that I have? And how is that going to then continue to help me make giant steps toward that epic mission while also hitting my target audience and making the impact that I'm here to make? So I think we don't stop enough and look at where we're headed and make sure that we're still on the right path and make sure that we, like, do we need to charge more because we're women and we tend to undercharge, or do we just need to repackage and price and position ourselves differently? So I think those are huge things. If you're in your first couple of years of business, don't stress about getting to the six-figure mark. You need to figure some things out. And if you've never been in business for yourself, there's a lot of learning to do. There's tons of organizations out there that you can belong to that'll help you. You know, leads groups can be great for those early stages in business. But, you know, if you're at that, let's say, three to seven-year mark of being in business and you're not yet crossing that six-figure threshold, it might be some time to sit down and talk to a business coach, talk to a marketing coach, see if there are things that you can tweak so that your effort output can actually create, the results that you're trying to create. You might just be barking up the wrong tree or walking with cinder blocks on.
I love that visual of the cinder blocks. That's really... Every time you say that, I can literally see it.
Yeah, it just came through on this interview. It's funny how that happens.
Rachel, do you want to ask some of our final signature questions?
I sure would, Gina. So, Megan, how do you define sexy?
How do I define sexy? That's a good question. The uninhibited root chakra open expression of your true essence.
Ooh, now that's one we haven't had. I like that word, uninhibited. It's good.
I love that.
Now, what about the best advice you've ever been given from a woman or a man?
I do remember an early coach saying to me that I'm dividing myself personally and professionally. This was when I first started my business. And she suggested to me that the faster I can weave those two sides of myself together so that I can feel like someone who knows how to create healthy boundaries and also continue to ask for help, so on and so forth, but who doesn't feel so bifurcated, that I'll be a happier person. And that was definitely something that I took early on that was extremely helpful. Yeah, that's what I've got off the top of my head.
That's a good one. And lastly, what is one piece of advice that you wish you had been given?
Oh, yeah. I remember when I was dancing with quitting drinking, I would stop drinking for like 3 months, and then there would be a birthday or something that, of course, I had to go have drinks with my friends for. Or I'd stop for 6 months, and then it would be a trip someplace, and I can't possibly go to Hawaii without a Mai Tai, blah, blah, blah. And as I was going through that period of time, I distinctly remember thinking to myself, man, I wish that somebody would just give me permission to quit drinking. Like, I wish I would walk into my doctor's office and they would tell me, you really should stop, or my acupuncturist or my chiropractor, whoever, just my therapist, anyone, would you please just tell me to stop drinking? And it wasn't until I myself came to that decision and that conclusion that I actually quit for good. So it has to come from within. Whatever it is has to be internalized, and it has to create so much of an opportunity for you that you finally decide that you're worth it. And you really take action toward that. I wish somebody would have told me that.
There you go. Hopefully somebody that needs to hear that will hear that. Have you been back to France since you quit drinking?
Oh, I have. That was quite the interesting thing. My host,
even know what to think.
My host father was just like, okay, you're lost. And I'm like, no, but that's okay. And I
your game.
Smile and just, you know, be cool with it. It was very,
oh yeah. The restaurant and the waiters and the waitresses, they had no idea how to handle my husband and I, because my husband doesn't drink either. They're like, you're on your honeymoon and you don't want champagne. What the hell?
I guess we'll bring you l'eau sans avec gaz. We'll bring you some l'eau minéral. Would you like some sparklings in it?
Oh, it's funny. Well, Megan, it's been so good having you. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, ladies.
And for people to reach out to you, learn more about the Dames, and I know that there are probably some people interested in how to start a chapter. I know that that's something that they can learn more about. Where can they go to learn more about you and the Dames?
Yes, everything is at www.thedames.co. No M at the end there. And we're on Facebook and LinkedIn and Instagram as at the Dames Co. And of course, you can find me at Megan Conter if you want to follow me on Instagram and ask me any questions about being sober or letting go of anger or any of the other fun adventures that I love to go on and share about.
Or a lesson in French. Awesome. Thanks again, Megan, for being on the show.
Thank you, ladies.
And thank you, Warners, for listening to this episode of Women Your Mother Warned You About. For more information about the show and all the things, all the socials, me, Rachel, Keith, the guy who went out for cigarettes and never came back, you can go to the Women Your Mother Warned You About.com. I don't know if I told you that, Rachel, that was a comment Doug made one day.
Oh yeah.
Keith went out
for cigarettes. The cigarettes are such a theme in our 2020.
I know. We love you, Keith. We miss you, Keith. So go check us out. And hey, give the gift of this show by recommending it to other people to listen to it. That's the best thing you could do for us besides a review. For more about me, you can go to GinaTremarco.com. That's all I got to say. Rachel, you got anything else to say?
You can find me all over social media as The Singing Lender, and also my fitness journey. You can follow on Instagram at UltraFit Lifestyle. It's getting kind of interesting since I'm 8 weeks out from my first bikini competition. So follow me there to see what happens.
You need to follow her because she was already fine, but she is mighty fine now.
It's a fascinating. We'll have to do an episode on the whole journey because it has been so interesting learning this industry and this sport.
Yeah, I'd love to talk about the business behind that.
Oh, yeah.
All right, we got to go. So thanks for listening. Bye, Warners.
This really will get serious soon.
Yeah, It doesn't have to. I don't think anybody wants it to be serious.
Women Your Mother Warned You About is a Pod About It production. You've got a great idea. Let's pod about it. Visit podaboutit.com for more information.
Woof, woof. Monkey, monkey.